Marion College basketball this weekend. Yes, I'm talking about Providence winning the Big East, not the fact that seven top 10 teams lost. I've been on, Brad, this is going to sound like a flex. I've been on five radio shows and podcasts since Saturday evening ended, since we had the top six teams lose. Every single one of them started with, wow, that day, we were actually six radio shows and podcasts. Every single one of them started with, wow, history, the most top 10 teams to lose in a single day. So, Brad, open the floor to you. What did the most top 10 teams losing in a single day mean to you?
Well, I didn't even see half of them. I mean,
busy watching the Friars.
And because we went early to get the Senior Day t-shirt. I think it was...
What a guy.
This was a couple years ago, but there was Chris Dunn bobblehead night, and we went to the game like an hour early, and we were like way too late. So my fiance was like, "Well, this time we're going 2 hours early," and I was like, "What if we don't get it? That'll be the ultimate disaster going to a game 2 hours early to get the promotion, and you don't get the promotion." But we got the t-shirt, so I missed the whole five. I saw most of Auburn, Tennessee, and then we departed. So missed a lot of that window, but yeah, didn't see any of the Arizona game. I got back just in time for the very end of St. Mary's Gonzaga, okay. And watched some USC Oregon. But yeah, I missed the whole evening window, so.
You're a very useful podcaster, Brad. You really are.
I mean, the Colorado game wasn't even on my radar. I didn't realize that was a thing.
Especially because Colorado would look. My good friend and colleague Jeremy Wu was at Arizona State, Colorado on Thursday. He had done the quick. He was the second Sports Illustrated writer to make the pilgrimage to Colorado to go to Fort Collins to see David Roddy, and then followed that up with Arizona State, Colorado, just to check in on Jabari Walker. I was like, Colorado looks awful. And 2 days later, they beat Arizona. But I know Rob Doster mentioned the statistic that like five of the last six Pac-12 champions have lost at Colorado that season. And like something like 9 of 10 or like however many years there's been of a Pac-12 with Utah and Colorado, like all but one of those years, the Pac-12 champion lost at least one of the games on the Utah-Colorado road trip. It's like a notoriously challenging road trip. But nevertheless, that was certainly surprising.
I mean, people may forget that. I mean, Colorado was really good last year, you know?
Yes.
Ted Boyle's page, but it feels like that they're in the NCAA tournament under Ted Boyle more often than not. And then Utah had some great teams maybe like 5 or so years ago with DeLon Wright and Jakob Poeltl and Kyle Kuzma, but have fallen short recently. But this is really the only year I can remember where both those games would seem like easy games on the surface.
Agree with that. I couldn't believe I was going through. We're working on the top 50 players in the country list for Sports Illustrated. And I was going through ours from last year just to kind of see some of the guys that are back where we had had them. I saw McKinley Wright's name, and I was like, there's no way that McKinley Wright was playing college basketball last year.
Like, it feels forever.
I mean, oh my goodness. But now kudos to Colorado, which had a kind of season-defining win, might put them in the mix for an NIT berth, potentially. They really only have one bad loss all season, or two bad losses, home Arizona State, and they lost to Southern Illinois on a neutral in the Paradise Jam. They've had a pretty decent year and somewhat of a rebuild. Obviously, Evan Batty gone, after the season, unless he COVID years. But, you know, they could theoretically bring everyone back. I know Jabari Walker would be on draft boards, but that was a nice win, kind of a, program builder for Tad Boyle there. I think certainly the most surprising one. Any alarm bells there for you with Arizona, Brad?
Not really. I mean, one, I didn't watch the game, so it'd be hard to have an alarm bell. And two, I was watching Jordan Sperber's video about the duck-ins.
Oh yeah, the duck ins.
You really notice the duck in, you know, even prior to the video, on the drives, when like the guy takes one dribble in the half court and he like gets straight to the rim and like the defender's like viciously trying to fight over the offensive guy ducking in, which half the time could just be him like pulling him away from the play, pulling him out of help defense.
Yes. When they're just, I mean, they're so hard to guard because Tabellis is as good of a passer. I mean, he's obviously not as good as Domantas Sabonis was, but like when you think about the Gonzaga teams that played two bigs, he has a lot of similarities to what Sabonis brought to the table. He's a really good post scorer. He runs the floor a little better. He's not quite as strong, but he's a good post scorer. He's got good touch. He can really pass. He can defend. He's a good rebounder. Like, he has been tremendous. Like, I think he is kind of the forgotten man among some of the best players in the country. I mean, I think he's a legitimate, you know, top 15 to 20 player in the sport.
You mentioned the top 50 players caused me to bring up my preseason rankings to see who are the guys that I was like way off on. I had Tabellis at 30th in the preseason.
Yeah.
Just looking at mine quickly, I had here are some of the errors. We'll go through the errors. Imani Bates at number 9.
Jesus.
Jalen Duren at 14, I guess, is an error.
Yeah, I wouldn't have him top 50.
Marcus Carr at 16.
Yep, off.
Jabari Smith at 20. That's not too bad, I don't think.
No, I think maybe a little bit. I mean, I think for what you expected in the preseason was the right ranking. He's just been a little bit better.
My 21 to 30 is a mess, though. Here are the errors in that one. I had Darius Days at 21.
Yeah.
Remy Martin at 23.
Ugh.
Dawson Garcia at 27.
Yeah, that's a yike.
Matthew Meyer at 28. And then my man Liam Robbins at 29. Barely played this
year. You love Liam Robbins, Brad. One of my favorite bits from Brad is the fact that, like, he is the most ardent Liam Robbins defender in the preseason after being like anti-Liam Robbins the previous year.
I was never anti-Liam Robbins. No one loves rim protectors more than
me. No, you just in the preseason you were like Minnesota's getting too much hype. Like Liam Robbins wouldn't be like if he had been in a high major wouldn't be like hyped like this. And then he started playing Minnesota and you're like, man, Liam Robbins is great. Vanderbilt, I mean, a lot of teams watching closely to Vanderbilt's closing stretch here because they are exactly 75th in KenPom, which means...
Oh, I thought the Johnnies were 75th, I saw. But...
Or not KenPom, in net, I think.
Yeah, I was talking about it too, but maybe the Johnnies fell down more.
They're 74 or 75 in the net, and everybody really wants the that quadrant one. Loyola, that's a road Q1 for Loyola, for VCU, it's a road Q1 if it stays there. For BYU, it doesn't really matter because they're a neutral. That's a neutral court win for BYU. Who else beat Vanderbilt in a game here that might matter?
Arkansas lost to Vanderbilt.
Arkansas lost to Vanderbilt on its home court. You want to keep that Q2
versus Q3, right?
Yeah, Q2 versus Q3. Alabama cheap to Q1. You know, you go through, it's like, you know, Tennessee cheapy Q1, South Carolina cheapy Q1 for the NIT push. I mean, yeah, people really want that Q1 for Vanderbilt. So,
can we talk Trey Mitchell for a second?
Sure, and then we have to get to these actual games that happened.
Well, I mean, we could talk about Texas West Virginia if you want to, but
I don't really want to talk about Texas West Virginia.
I had him 68th in the preseason. He was playing. And then his dad's going on Twitter being like, Chris Beard won't play my son. And like, he doesn't know what he's doing. And I mean, Trey Mitchell had like 15 to 20 minutes a game locked up, right? On a top 25 team. Why is he leaving midseason? But
I think some people attributed all of the Trey Mitchell, Tony Bergeron drama to Tony Bergeron. And I think it is partially Tony Bergeron, is not entirely attributable to Tony Bergeron.
Come from both ways, huh?
Jeez. Oh, yeah. I believe so. I will note this. We are podcasting as Texas plays Baylor. So we won't have a result to have to close this take out. But I do think it's worth noting, as Texas is leading in this game very early. Again, we'll see. Regardless of result here, it's worth noting that Texas right now is the highest they've been in KenPom. If they were to finish the season at 14, which is where they are as we podcast today, that would be their highest KenPom finish since the 2010-2011 season. That was Tristan Thompson's and Corey Joseph's freshman season at Texas. Like, I think there's been this kind of narrative that like Texas is a disappointing team and Texas, you know, Beard is floundering as Mark.
That's because somebody at Sports Illustrated put them at number two in the preseason.
That's true. And someone at Stadium did too. But I mean, it is interesting to me that Texas is like a consensus top 25 team. They're top 15 in KenPom. They're well on track to be a top 5 seed in the NCAA tournament. They've beaten Kansas. They might beat Baylor as we speak. Again, it doesn't really matter, I think, for the purposes of the argument. And people are like, yeah, man, Chris Beard, he stinks. He's no good. Texas is a dead-end job. You can't win there. It's like, eh. I think Chris Beard's doing a fine job.
It's the you know, the whole aesthetics of it with.
Oh, and they're playing slow, and Devin Askew's playing, and he sucks, and Brock Cunningham's playing, and he sucks. And
I mean, no one has like more timely offensive rebounds to be timed up with announcer praise than Brock Cunningham. Like he gets in the game, he's like, oh, this guy, he's, you know, Mr. Hustle. And then he goes, oh, an offensive rebound for Cunningham. Oh my God.
He's never gotten an offensive rebound while the broadcasters are like telling a story about something else. It's only when there's nothing else to say. And it takes a charge too. Got to hit the charge.
But yeah, maybe we overrated the talent level.
Oh, I think we 100% did. 100% did.
You know, because I said a million times that they had seven top 100 players.
Yeah.
And Bishop does not look good. DC's really not look good.
That's the big problem. I also think it could be simultaneously true that Chris Beard is not doing the best coaching job of his career, and also that he's not doing a bad job with this group. You know, like, I don't think Chris Beard is like killing it. I'm not saying Chris Beard should be like coach of the year or whatever, but I think it is worth noting that like people are like, oh, it's Shaka disease. Like, oh, well, Chris Beard has a very good chance to have the best team that Texas has had in 11 years since like good Rick Barnes era.
Did Shaka's Texas team last year get dinged in the final KenPom a lot by losing Abilene? Is that why? Because weren't they?
No, they were 23rd in KenPom that entering that game.
So that was a seed list, you know, a resume versus predictive.
Yes, that's correct. Well, they were top 5 in KenPom in December of that season, and kind of slowly rose, which is weird because they didn't get blown out ever. I don't know.
How about first round? Let's do Texas versus North Texas first round.
I would enjoy that. Grant McCaslin versus Chris Beard, two good friends, two guys who grew up, who rose in the profession in very similar paths, two guys who play a very similar style of defense. Ross Hodge, the associate head coach at North Texas, is the coordinator of that defense in a very similar way to the way Mark Adams was the coordinator of the Texas Tech defenses under Beard. They modeled their staff. So it's actually very interesting, Brad. There's three staffs in particular, because they're all friends, that have very similar structures. So Chris Beard and Mark Adams kind of set this tone. Joe Golding and Brett Tanner at Abilene Christian, and now Joe Golding's at UTEP, and Grant McCaslin with Ross Hodge at North Texas. They're all cut from the same cloth. They all operate their programs very similarly. They're different people, but they run that no middle defense, and they all kind of learn it from each other. So there's your fun podcasting nugget of the day if you're very interested in the state of Texas college basketball.
I mean, it could be back-to-back years where Texas loses to the mid-major Texas school in the first round.
At this point, I mean, North Texas could be an at-large. They're very good.
And they lost a ton. I mean, James Reese off to South Carolina.
Javion Hamlet graduated.
They did a tremendous job. One of their bigs, too, I think, left. But.
Yeah, Simmons. But anyway, I want to touch on Purdue first, because honestly, that was the game that surprised me even more than Arizona. Right? Arizona is a classic kind of road spot. Purdue losing to a Michigan State team that was in free fall really surprised me. It almost doesn't matter.
Just one thing quickly, though.
Yes, sir.
The go-to criticism for a coach when things aren't going well, like I've seen people say this about Mike Anderson and about Patrick Ewing, is that they always say, why is the coach trying new lineups now? It's February. You know, how does he not have his rotation set? And then Izzo put in like three new starters, right?
He shook it up a little bit, and they needed a shakeup. Started Marble, Hall, and Hogarth instead of Walker, Bingham. And I think they were starting Hauser, maybe not. At least two new starters. But
that was such
way.
A weird criticism. You know, whenever I see that, it's like why does it matter how late it is in the season to use a new lineup? I don't understand that.
So I think the way I would frame it, Brad, is like, no matter what, when the fan base has decided the coach is not doing a good job, they're going to be critical no matter which direction you'd go, right? So in the case of Michigan State, if it didn't change the lineup, everyone would say, you know, what the heck? Why can't we make some adjustments? This team stinks. Why aren't we making adjustments? If St. John's didn't make it, St. John's is changing the lineup while the team stinks, it's, oh, why is the coach changing lineups? You know, he doesn't know what he's doing. You know, if you're playing a guy with two fouls, and he gets his third in the first half, you know, you're going to say, oh, well, why'd you keep him in? Because now the guy's in foul trouble and it's no good. And if you don't play him with two fouls and the other team goes on a run, you say, why didn't you play him with two fouls? You know, we just gave a run because of it. And now we stink. So, you know, I just think more than anything, it's you're never going to win. Expecting cohesive and logical arguments from people on Twitter is sometimes a bridge too far, I guess.
Damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Indeed. Let's move on to Purdue, Michigan State. I mentioned it before. I just am at a point where I can't trust Purdue. And again, a lot of you won't hear this podcast until after Purdue, Wisconsin goes final. And I almost don't think it matters. Like I don't know that there's any benefit of the doubt to be earned for this Purdue team. I think they're good. They're explosive offensively. They have three elite players. But at the end of the day, it is hard to trust them because they don't get stops when it matters. They turn in lifeless performances too often. They're not, you know, overly. I don't think they're overly tough. I think Jaden Ivey either does too much or does too little. And they laid an egg against a Michigan State team that was in free fall. Like let's tell it how it is here, right? I mean, maybe Michigan State goes out and, you know, starts rolling here, and that's the game that turned it. But Michigan State had been really bad, and it would not surprise me if they continue to be really bad. I don't necessarily think this game said that much about Michigan State. I think it said a lot about Purdue and how they continue to let every point guard that plays them have career days. I mean, Tyson Walker and A.J. Hogarth combined for 19 points and 10 assists in this game. At some point, like, why is Devontae Jones having a double-double when they play them? Why is it, point guards are thriving when they play against Purdue. They have all year. Fats Russell torched Purdue. Devontae Jones torched Purdue. These are not superstars. Rob Finney, Xavier Johnson torched Purdue. These are not elite point guards. You gonna give it a go, Brad?
Oh, I thought that you were gonna keep going, but
no, I'm done with my diatribe. I apologize.
Well, what I was gonna say was, so on Field of 68, and you guys were talking about, you know, what a dynamic Purdue offense this is. You know, it's best offense, blah blah blah. Isn't it really interesting that most of the guys they play don't really contribute to the offense, like? This is a team that really has three offensive threats, you can run Stefanovic off screens and stuff. He doesn't really create for himself. And then you got the two bigs and Ivy, right? So there's really only three guys who can create their own shot at a high level, and only two of them can play at once. The rest of the guys are such kind of glue guys or kind of inconsistent offensive factors. I think that's, you know, kind of weird how they can be so good, but like Ethan Morton and Caleb First and Mason Gillis and Thompson Hunter, I mean, these aren't scary offensive players. So I think that could be a factor as to why Ivy sometimes is playing too fast and turn it over, trying to do too much. And just, you know, they have these great bigs, but we saw in the Michigan State game that having those great big scores cuts both ways when on the defensive end, pick and roll, and they get the switch, and then Walker goes over the top with a three.
And the other problem is Zach Edey is being I think a lot of this is officiating. You know, I don't blame Zach Edey for all of this, but Zach Edey gets called for 2 to 3 fouls a game just because of who he is and how big he is. And, like, they're impactful fouls. They're offensive fouls that would be layups that should be three-point plays. Instead, they're offensive fouls, or they're, you know, over the backs and things that give you extra possession of free throws. And when you're a Purdue team that already doesn't shoot great from the free throw line, that doesn't, like you said, have a ton of guys who can create their own shot, when you get, like, wide-open post-ups one-on-one for Zach Edey, like, you know, you need to execute on those, and you need to have him on the floor for late-game situations, because I think he's their most reliable player. Like, I think he's the guy that I would want the ball in his hands, you know, with, you know, 10 seconds left in a tie game with one possession. You know, I don't want him on the floor late game as much if I can avoid it because of the defense, but, like, he is an elite scorer. Like, he is one of the best scoring big men in the country, and, you know, the fact that he's in foul trouble constantly, it's a problem.
And they usually, if not always, close with Williams, right?
They usually do, yes. Yeah. Except if it's an offensive possession. If they can get, like, an isolated offensive possession, it'll be Edey. Like, the Ohio State last possession, Edey was on the floor.
Yeah, but yeah, it's a weird roster that's working because of the unique style and the star power. But, you know, talking about maybe a potential tournament upset with their pick and roll deficiencies, what if they get Marquette in a 2-7 game? You know, Marquette can really dice you up in pick and roll. Size could be an issue. You know, Marquette's bigs are slight. They're springy and athletic. They're not big and strong to fight with Edey, but in terms of picking apart a defense, Tyler Cole looks as good as any. You know, thinking about the other seven seeds, Colorado State could be very scary in that regard. Playing small, spacing out the bigs, playing Roddy at the five. So Purdue has his work cut out for it.
And again, I mean, the history is not good with these teams, right? I mean, we framed it a number of different ways. I know the Iowa comparison goes on a lot. I'll frame it another way. My colleague at SI, Molly Geary, who's my fantastic editor, who is the secret to my success at Sports Illustrated, she wrote in 2019 something before the tournament, what are called extreme teams. You know, essentially what she defines as a team that's top 10 in offensive or defensive efficiency, but not in the top 50 on the other side of the ball. And such a low percentage of those teams have advanced, you know, relative to their seed. You know, they you know, especially the teams that were top five seeds really struggled. Like 40% of 5-12 and 4-13 upsets have happened to extreme teams, you know, even though they only represented a small percentage of the total 5-12 and 4-13 games. Like, it, 2 and 3 seeds have consistently went out. You know, only 10 out of like 140 historically, you know, extreme teams have made it to the Elite Eight or the Final Four. Like, it is so hard to get there. And I just think at some point that's the ceiling we have to reconcile with Purdue, right? And again, I start to think about things in the perspective of, like, could I envision myself going through a bracket on Selection Sunday or on Monday after Selection Sunday and coming away with Baylor or with Purdue, excuse me, as the national champion. And I can't. Like, I can't envision a circumstance where the bracket would fall where I would say I'm picking Purdue six straight times.
Well, I mean, the only teams that you would be confident in picking, I think, for six straight would be Gonzaga, Arizona, and Kentucky. However, I don't think that those teams are necessarily that much better than Kansas, Baylor, Duke, Auburn, Purdue, you know, all those other tier two teams. Just for some reason, I don't know if it's the size or the NBA talent or the long winning streaks, but it feels like Kentucky, Gonzaga, and Arizona are the three safest.
Yes. I mean, I think they're the most complete, the most talented. Where would you stand on Duke in that regard?
See, the thing with Duke is they play down, you know, way more, right? Their losses, Ohio State, and then kind of the teams that they breathe life to in the ACC, you know, outside of the now injured and out of it Florida State, I mean, all those teams that they lost to, they could see in a second round in a 2-7 or a 2-10 game, you know?
Yeah.
So what's to say if they don't play down in that game and they're out in the second round?
Right. I mean, I just think, like, talent-wise, they're so impressive.
They are. I mean, they're incredibly impressive. They have so much size, too.
I mean, I was looking earlier, again, kind of working on this top 50 players thing. Mark Williams' stats are bananas. Mark Williams, you know, I think a lot of people have been saying, oh, yeah, Theo John Platoon. Like, Mark Williams is averaging 22 minutes a game, 11.7 rebounds and three blocks, and shooting 73% from the field.
That's insane, yeah.
And not only that, you know, like, if you – I looked earlier, so I want to pull them up again so I have the numbers right. I've been hammering away at Hoop Explorer lately, looking at on-off numbers. Love the on-offs. Like, holy cow. Mark Williams is so impactful to them. And you can look back at the tape, right? The biggest game, obviously, was Gonzaga. He was tremendous in that game. So yeah, they are they're like five or seven points better per 100 possessions. With Williams on the floor, even than John, you know, they are so good when Mark Williams is on the floor. He's a monster, and you add that to Moore, who's a glue guy. Griffin, who's shooting 53% from three in his last 10 games. Paolo, like, I get that Duke hasn't necessarily shown it to be the best team in the country, but they've been consistently good enough that for me, like, I really think they belong in any, like, ranking of the title teams in the top 5 to 6, in my mind.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd probably put them fourth for me, outside of the three I mentioned.
Yeah.
Auburn's really slipping.
Yeah, let's actually talk about Auburn, because I know every single podcast has done, gee, you know, Wendell Green struggling.
It's just, you can't have the Wendell Green type of point guard when your two best players are bigs, right? You need the George Hill type of point guard, you know, like a Colin Gillespie type, one who can hit open threes, who's not going to make mistakes, who's going to play hard, and can get a shot if he needs it. Whereas Wendell Green is someone who's always looking to score and always looking to get shots. And, you know, we touched on this last week, I think, too, but when your point guard's like that, and your shooting guard, KD Johnson's like that as well. It makes for a tough fit. And, you know, they're another team that's not really playing aesthetically pleasing ball, right?
Yeah.
It feels like in an effort to get Jabari Smith the ball more, it's like a lot of Jabari Smith, okay, go and shoot an 18-footer over the top of your defender, like a 10 out of 10 difficulty shot. Comes with the territory of being such a highly regarded player that you're being defended a lot more. But I think a lot of the, you know, he's the number one pick. He should be orchestrating the offense. I think he's been forcing it
I mean, he's been really good, though, lately. Like statistically, I get that he's forcing it, and I get it's not always pretty. But, like, that dude is playing really good basketball. Like, he is not even close to the problem.
He had one play. You know, everyone was talking about the Chet play, I think, from Thursday night, where he dribbled the length of the court and dunked it. Jabari had one of those where he pulled up for a three. That was super impressive.
Yeah, no, he's been ridiculous. Like again, I can't express enough how little of the problem Jabari is, right? It's everyone else. Jabari had 27 in the loss to Tennessee, 28 in the loss to Florida. He had 31 against Vanderbilt. He had 20 on the road at Arkansas in the overtime loss. Like when they have not played well, it hasn't been Jabari. It's been everybody else. And, you know, I think Auburn's still really good. I think one of the things that just kind of gets forgotten about in college basketball, like teams go through ups and downs, and Auburn was the best team in the country in January. That's fine. Like right now they're not. That doesn't mean they won't be again by March, you know, late March. Maybe Wendell Green will go on a heater again. Maybe, you know, the chemistry will fix itself. You know, maybe, you don't know, right? Like there are plenty of things that can happen, but right now is Auburn, you know, a top five team? No, they're not. Like they just haven't been to that level. And, you know, I think it's disappointing. I also think, like, quite frankly, they really, you know, they've lost, what, four games all season, one in double overtime, one in regular overtime, one by one and one by five. Right? Like, and three of those games were the top 15 teams in the country, or at least top 20. Right? Like, they're like downstretched. It's not exactly a strong indictment of where Auburn's at. They're still really, really good.
Yeah, I mean, out of the teams that will be two seeds or fringe one seeds, would you rather play Kansas or Auburn? Let's say you're your seven seed Colorado State Rams. Who do you want to say, Auburn or Kansas?
I would say Kansas. Because I don't think Kansas scares me talent-wise.
If you have a good wing defender who can lock up Agbaji, they become a lot more manageable.
Well, the Colorado State Rams have been much better defensively lately. That's worth noting. Colorado State is an unbelievable resume. Like, if we were in a WOB world, Colorado State would be a four seed per T-rank. Terrific job by Nico Medved. And I tweeted earlier, I mean, it's all about recruiting. I mean, their first seven recruits at Colorado State were Kendall Moore, 1,000-point scorer, Adam Thistlewood, top five all-time at Colorado State and made threes, David Roddy, NBA player, Isaiah Stevens, koozie list, John Tanjay, starting wing, probably going to score 1,000 points. And then their two centers, James Moores and Deshaun Thomas. Not a single miss, not a single transfer. Those are your first seven recruits.
And we saw Moores playing on U19 for New Zealand, and he didn't look so hot, but that was against Team USA.
Right. No, James Moores also is not like a stud. He's like a glue guy center. I mean, he's a, you know, verticality, you know, play physical, don't screw up. You know,
Timofey Mozgov.
You're not running any sets for James Moores. But that's enough, I think, on the Rams, who are very, very good. What other games from that top 10? Arkansas. I want to talk Arkansas, Brad, because this team has just had this drastic turnaround. And a lot of it's Jalen Williams. Jalen Williams was, you know, rarely in double figures for the first month and a half of the season. I was only in double figures twice, or three times before January 8th. And then after January 8th, he's been in double figures every single game. He's averaging 14 and 11 in that stretch. Has been really, really efficient. Is a really good passer. But, you know, the duo of him and Note, with all the guys around him who are big and physical and guard and can switch, like, it's a pretty dangerous, you know, dangerous lineup, and obviously they're defending at a high level. Note is really, you know, risen. I don't know that I buy the, like, top 10 for National Player of the Year race, but You know, he is absolutely, you know, he's absolutely a tremendous guard, one of the better guards in the country. It's been a really impressive run for Arkansas. I wasn't surprised they beat Kentucky. I think the only thing that holds them back, quite frankly, is that, you know, they can't play the NCAA tournament at Bud Walt, right? I mean, it's kind of the same thing as Texas Tech. They're unbelievable on their home court.
Tennessee too.
Yeah, Tennessee too. I mean, absolutely. I mean, those three teams have been just ridiculous on their home court, and you know, Auburn. I mean, Auburn has been great at Auburn Arena and really, really mediocre otherwise. I mean, that's, I think, one of the interesting things is kind of the road neutral stuff. But I think Arkansas really looks the part right now.
Absolutely. And do you think Jalen Williams is off to the NBA?
I don't know.
I mean, he's very fluid. He's very athletic. He can pass. He can step out, hit a jumper.
I don't think he's a lock to get drafted.
We'll see if that's still the case,
right?
On April 1st.
But he should test.
And yeah, as you mentioned, Notte has been incredible on a heater. And I heard Musselman, I don't remember which show, whether it was a podcast, maybe it was a Field of 68 podcast, I don't remember. He's saying that the big change was moved Notte to the one and Moody to the two and slotted in Trey Wade in there at the four, and they went bigger, and that was the right button to hit.
But the thing about it, though, and I think let me frame it this way. They still spend more time than not with Devo in the game at the two. But I think taking Devo out of the starting lineup and playing a defensive-minded guy like Trey Wade at the four as the starter, I think that move was more like emblematic than anything else, and it was a, you know, a message to send to Devo that, like, this is JD Notte's team. No debate, JD Notte's team. He needs the ball in his hands. He needs to be playing two-man game with Jalen Williams. And Devo, when you come in, you're playing like you did last year. And I think that's fixed a lot of their issues, without question.
One game I was really looking forward to. Well, we didn't even really talk about the game. Kentucky, Grady was iced. You know, he was taken out of the game. Chibwe, I mean, it's just so incredible. I mean, he just comes out at every loose ball with the ball, right? Every shot off the rim, the ball's in his hands. He's doing a better job scoring around the rim. Incredible motor. You have to be in incredible shape to get 20 rebounds in a game with him rebounding out of his area and everything. Washington and Wheeler, maybe I wasn't watching them closely enough, but they didn't seem to be too hampered.
Right? They didn't look hobbled. They just didn't look explosive to me.
They looked fine. Kind of game deciding shot coming down to a Keon Brooks three was kind of rough, but what are you gonna do? I mean, it's not a bad loss.
Well, no, I will say this though with Kentucky, I think Kentucky's an excellent team, but it's constant excuses, right? When Kentucky's losing games, it's, oh well, you know, Ty wasn't healthy. Oh well, now Sevier wasn't healthy. Now Ty wasn't healthy. Now they both play. Oh well, you know, they were just coming off an injury, so they're really not that healthy. And
I've been fighting all year to remove these asterisks.
Get rid of the asterisk.
This has been my crusade, and now finally people are coming to my side. It's ridiculous. I mean, people miss every game. There's someone missing from, like, literally every game. Like, once Kevin Willard was like, we can't count these games because we don't have Obiagu and Samuel, and now they, like,
no. The end of the asterisk was Jacoby Neathan, Ben Carlson.
Right.
But that was the death of the asterisk.
But the beginning of the end was the whole Kevin Willard thing with, you know, I was watching a Seton Hall game the other day, and they closed with Yetna at the five. Like, Obiagu and Samuel are like, important, but, like, we can't be making exceptions for fourth through sixth best players, or even worse than, you know, like, some point, we just got to play. I mean, it's unbelievable. But anyway, you were saying.
I think the point I'm making is just, like, I think at some point we need to, like, indict Kentucky somewhat for really not winning that many big games, you know? Right. Yeah. That they're in a lot of these games and just haven't won a ton of them. And I think they're, again, I thought it was an interesting recipe for Arkansas defensively. They essentially said, like, Sheboy is going to be the one to beat. Like, if Sheboy wants to beat us with twos, Sheboy can beat us with twos. Like, we're not letting Kellen Grady get shots. We're not letting Ty and Sevier get downhill. We're not letting this game become a track meet. We're going to make you play this game in the half court, and we're going to make you play with post-ups. And Sheboy got his. He was terrific. I mean, we talked about it. Like, 30 and 18 is ridiculous. Like, that is a all-world number for anyone other than Oscar Sheboy. But, like, I don't know. I think at some point, like, that's an interesting recipe, right? I mean, Kellen Grady's been so important. You know, I think Doster mentioned this on the show last night. Like, at some point, do you start treating Kellen Grady like Sasha Stefanovic? Like, he's the key to the team. Because without Grady hitting shots, this Kentucky offense does not seem that scary to me.
No, and they need Wheeler and Washington to be aggressive and probing and attacking and finding Grady, and then Brooks can do some mid-range jumpers. He can crash the glass, same with Toppin, and that's, and then Sheway cleaning everything up and scoring down low. That's the equation. So guard play very important, but we'll see. It was the game that they won without Washington and Wheeler. What was that game? Was that Alabama. LSU?
Alabama.
Oh, Bama. Yes. That was it, where Bama had that heater in the first half and then came down to earth in the second. That, I think, skewed everyone's expectations, right? Where they're like, oh, Kentucky can still beat a top 25 team without their two guards. I mean, the ceiling is the roof.
Yes. No, without question. What other games did you want to mention?
How about one game I was really looking forward to that was like over by the first media timeout? That was Houston SMU.
Houston loves to pounce on teams early.
Yeah, I wanted to get a good look at SMU, and I was picking up my phone like midway through the first half. Like, all right, when's the Illinois game starting? Carlton was great on the glass. Edwards was hitting shots. Moore hit a key three early that just put SMU in a hole, and it was just like never competitive. And it's kind of scary for SMU because they beat them the first time at home. But I mean, this Houston team is not that good. I mean, they've been playing with their food a little bit, and SMU needed another resume builder. I think they're probably like last four in right now. You know, right on the cusp. And you know, the AAC doesn't give you a ton of opportunities. And now, maybe for a broader discussion, you know, people talk bid thieves all the time, right? Oh, watch out for the bid thieves. There really aren't that many conferences that should have bid thieves this year.
Well, I mean, it is pretty rare for a high major bid thief, I should say.
Yeah, because we got two last year, and that was incredible. But like the Mountain West has three or four at-large teams. I would be stunned if one of Colorado State, Wyoming, San Diego State, or Boise doesn't win that conference tournament. Murray State would be a bid thief if they lose, but yes. they just knocked the crap out of Belmont. I mean, anything can happen in these conference tournaments, but they have the double bye as well. So that one is more likely than the right. Mountain West, but doesn't seem super likely.
So right, Mountain West, no. OVC potential. Conference USA, North Texas, there's a potential.
They're very off the radar, though.
Oh, yeah.
Not a lot of people realize that they would be even in the at-large pool because they've been leading the conference the whole year as well.
Correct. Missouri Valley with Loyola Chicago, potentially.
I think probably not. But I know that you're
it's,
in.
It's, no, I mean, they're literally in the field today, right? Like more bracketologists than not would have them in the field today as an at-large. So because of that, I think you have to at least consider them among a bid stealer candidate, right? Like if they lose, fair. It opened. Yeah, you're adding another team to the pool, right?
And then I think the one big one is the A-10.
Oh, the A-10 is going to be a war.
I mean, Davidson has a pretty record. They haven't done a ton of stupid stuff.
I think
but they're really not that good.
Right. I think they're in, though, regardless.
Yeah, because they're like
as long as they beat George Mason on Wednesday. If they beat George Mason on Wednesday, they're at worst a 25-win A-10 champion who went 15-3 in conference play and has no real bad ones. Like, sign me up. And a win over Alabama on a neutral court. And a road game. It might be a road game. I don't know how it's counted on the team sheet.
The A-10 is the one that I'm pretty confident will be a bid thief. But none of the other leagues are really jumping out.
Unless you're a Lucas Harkins supporter and have VCU in the field. Lucas is VCU's most ardent supporter.
I know. I've noticed that definitely.
I like their resume when you like really look at it, you kind of like the resume, but
it's like very reliant on them getting a pass for not having Ace Baldwin at the start.
Yes, but it's very comparable to a lot of the bubble teams even without it.
We'll see, but that's another thing that doesn't have a lot of buzz, right? Like Lunardi's not putting them anywhere near.
No one's talking about him. Yeah.
Yeah. I think Bracket Dave doesn't have them anywhere near.
Dayton's dead after the LaSalle game, but they're a heck of a bid stealer because they've been really good. They're 17th in T rank since November 23rd. If you wipe the first 2 weeks of the season off, they're a top 20 team. Bonnie's is probably not getting an at large. I know Lunardi likes them more than everyone else, but they're 81 in Ken Pom. That's not happening. SLU is competitive. I don't think Richmond has any fight in them, but.
No. Yeah, so I think the A-10 has a pretty good shot at getting two bids again, which I remember 1 year they got six bids. I think that was 2014. They had Joe's with DeAndre Bembry. Trying to think. I think St. Louis had like Rob Lowe and Jordy or Jett. I think that was that year. I don't remember all the teams, obviously, because I can only think of two of the six, but I'm pretty sure they got six. Oh, Dayton with Archie Miller made the Elite Eight, I think. VCU is an educated guess that they probably made it that year. Two others, I don't know. Davidson would be an educated guess.
I don't have any good guesses.
Let me just look that up so I'm not just all right. The 2014 NCAA tournament. Oh no, that wasn't DeAndre Bembry. That was Langston Galloway because DeAndre Bembry, they made the second round. They lost to Oregon, I think, late, like the last game of the second round, Sunday night. Qualified teams. All right. Well, I don't like how they're doing this on Wikipedia. But yeah, VCU was a 5 seed with Shaka Smart.
Yes.
Dayton was an 11
seed. They nearly lost to Stephen F. Austin.
Didn't they lose on a 4-point play?
Did they lose that game? I thought that went to overtime. Maybe I'm wrong.
I don't remember either.
That was a ridiculous game, though.
Dayton was an 11 with Archie Miller. They beat... That was the following year.
They did win that game, by the way, Stephen F. Austin. That was year one of Brad Underwood. Casual 32-3, 18-0 in his first year as a head coach.
George Washington with Mike Lonergan. That's right. They played Memphis.
You know, like Tyler Cavanaugh. And
yeah, they were a 9 seed.
Coach Carm on the staff, I believe.
St. Joe's was a 10 seed. Let's see. Nothing in this region. Nebraska made it this year with Tim Miles. How about that? Wichita State was a 1 seed. That's
the only time ever, right?
Yeah. St. Louis was a 5 with Jim Cruz, and I think they beat NC State.
Was that Jordan Jett era?
I believe so, and Rob Lowe as well. Oh, and then UMass was a 6 seed with Caddy Lalane and the point guard. His name was Chaz Williams.
Chaz was terrific. Fantastic. And so they were in the same bracket as the Tennessee team coached by Donnie Tindall, I believe. Or maybe by Quanzo.
Quanzo. This was the Jarnell Stokes team that like really underachieved and then...
Yeah, they got 11 seed and Quanzo bounced to Cal.
Yep.
Quanzo Martin coaching at Tennessee feels like an eon ago.
It's incredible. Is he getting fired?
I think he's got one more.
Yeah, I mean, they were like an 8 seed last year.
And they've been at least scrappy enough the last like couple weeks. Like, they haven't been completely lifeless, you know. I think that was one of those for like where it was always like, don't give me an excuse, and he nearly did, but I think has righted the ship enough. The one that I don't think has, I think will open, is NC State.
I think this is it for old Kevin Keats.
I mean, what's the sell here? I mean, you should never be this bad at NC State.
And the Darian Seaburn is really good, and Terquavion Smith is like one of the best freshmen in the country.
He's a bucket. Yeah, right. That's the thing that's frustrating is you have Darian Seaburn, Terquavion Smith, Jericho Helms. Like, Cam Hayes doesn't suck. You know,
I think he might now. I think he didn't early in the year. I think he's on the downward trajectory. But, you know, Manny Bates getting hurt first, like, minute of the season.
Oh.
That was the death knell because they're – backup centers have like no experience. They're
well, a lot of coaches like to say that a lot of coaches like to claim that they're the least lucky coach in the country. Kevin Keats really might be. I mean, we've talked in the past about Danny Manning getting killed with the early entry, but Jalen Lake, Josh Hall, whatever.
Jalen LeCue.
Whatever. I don't care.
Josh Hall.
He never played in college basketball, so I don't have to pronounce his name.
Yeah.
Josh Hall.
Both those guys out of the NBA now. Hall got one two-way contract with Oklahoma City. That was it.
Manny Bates getting hurt first week of the year.
Greg Gant hasn't played the whole year.
I don't think that qualifies as bad.
He was going to show that he could score this year. That was
yeah, show he could score it. Just like
Al Durham didn't know how to use him. The guy who can't shoot or can't dribble has got to score at NC State.
It's like Al Durham handing the ball. Devin Daniels last year with the injury.
Yeah.
Brutal. They had a team that maybe could have been an NCAA tournament team if Devin Daniels doesn't get hurt.
Absolutely.
I mean, you go through. I mean, Shaquille Moore in the portal. He's a good player.
He's really good.
You know, they had the. They had a team that would have probably been an NCAA tournament team in 2020. COVID wipes it away with Markell Johnson as a senior.
And they lost Cat Barber early to go nowhere, Maverick Rowan early to go nowhere. I don't remember if those were Gottfried or Keats. I think probably Gottfried, but early entries kills everybody. But.
Yeah. I think you have to move on from Keats, though. I mean,
Archie Miller?
That's the name that people throw around.
Figure NC State fans wouldn't be happy with that. They seem to have a very high standard. Like higher standard than you would think based on their recent performance.
I just want Archie Miller to become the next head coach at NC State, and then for me to tweet, Archie Miller's the best coach in the triangle, and watch the world burn.
I mean, I think objectively, Hubert Davis with 1 year, it's been pretty disappointing, and John Shire with 0 years.
Correct. It would be great content.
That doesn't seem like Georgetown's going to open. I watched a good chunk of this game.
Patrick didn't seem like he wants to leave. And if
he was talking about next year and like all this stuff.
Well, if the whole idea that everyone's kind of floated, and I don't have a ton of connections to the Georgetown process, so I can't really say for sure. But like what everyone seems to say is like, oh yeah, you know, like Pat has to walk himself. Well, Pat didn't make it sound like he's walking himself. Let's put it that way.
He was like, I hope I'll be back. And you know, we're too young to know this, but I read this past week, and I don't remember where it was from, but I guess during an NCAA during a NBA lockout, Patrick Ewing had a quote about like why NBA players need to be paid more, and I was like, yeah, we make a lot of money, but we also spend a lot of money, and I guess people were not very happy with that. Similar to the Latrell Sprewell of like, we need the money to feed our families, that's why we need, you know, $10 million instead of $5 million, but I didn't realize that, but it seems like he's not someone who's going to say, screw it, I quit, you can take my buyout, and I don't care, I just want to leave. But I watched a good chunk of this UConn-Georgetown game because the SMU game was so boring. And this is what Georgetown does to everybody, right? Is they just get destroyed early, and then the other team stops caring, and then Georgetown claws back to, like, lose by 11. And Hurley put in, like, Roswell Dickens and Samson Johnson and, like, emptied the bench a little bit, and then had to go back with the starters because they kept on, you know, firing one pass threes and turning it over with, like, 2 minutes left.
Where do you stand on the court storming of the last week?
Providence was tough, man. Providence, I was like, I get it. Like, the first regular season title, like, no one gets that more than me. No one loves regular season titles more than me, and no one wanted this for Providence more than me. Especially because Villanova has now won 9 of the 11.
I think your court storm was justified. A championship storm is always a court storm.
It got really kind of stupid when no one would leave the court when they were like, hey, we want to bring the trophy out and cut down the nets, and like no one would leave the court. Because it's a catch-22 with drunk fans. Like, you want the students to be drunk so they're loud and cheering and yes, singing along and right and everything. But then you don't want the other drunk behavior, like somebody threw a beer on the court and
Alex O'Connell mic, yeah,
got a free throw. I guess before the game, people were like ripping doors off on campus.
Were you ever ripping doors off in your day, Brad?
No, absolutely not.
Brad strikes me as one of those guys that wouldn't drink before the basketball games because he had to be too locked in.
Absolutely. And at the dunk, they give you a tall boy, but it's $15.
Oh, killer.
I'm very cheap, number one.
Oh, yeah.
And I get sleepy when I drink, and I don't want people falling asleep.
I was always like that with Northwestern football games. Like, I would tailgate one game a year just to, like, say I did it, you know, participate in the tradition. But the other games, you know, I felt like I needed to be locked in, especially when we're good, you know? It's like trying to win a championship. You know, it can't be.
Yeah, I got to be locked in.
Got to be locked in. I appreciate
it. Yeah, I mean, great game. Creighton was dead in the water. I mean, A.J. Reeves had 7 threes. I mean, no one's beating Providence if A.J. Reeves had 7 threes.
I will say, though, that court storm was fine, but there were some real questionable ones this week. And this is from the court storm enthusiast. Colorado State stormed as a 6.5-point favorite against Wyoming.
Why did they storm? Because Wyoming was ranked and they weren't?
No, because Wyoming stormed the court on them when they played each other like a month ago.
Oh, my God.
Who else stormed that was unjustifiable?
Colorado won, I think, was fine.
Colorado, justifiable. St. Mary's, justifiable.
I have a Gonzaga take.
Oh, geez.
Do you think that, like, the players are, like, tired of being in the WCC? Like, do you think that they get any enjoyment about, like, oh, geez, we got to play Pepperdine and Loyola Marymount this week? You know, like, is it more of a chore to them?
I mean, I like that take.
Like, is Drew Timmy or Chet Holmgren? I think maybe the best litmus test would be, like, is Razier Bolton excited to play at Pepperdine? Yeah, because Chet, okay, he's going to the NBA. Timmy's an All-American. Nembhard is a borderline All-American. But, like, are these role players excited to play these games too? Feels like a big waste of time, honestly.
Yeah. There's, like, I know the league has done what they've can, like the league has done all they can, right? They've shortened the league schedule to play 16 league games, even though that means that, you know, you're not playing everybody twice just to give Gonzaga more league, more non-conference games and let Gonzaga not play. I mean, they almost always schedule it, so it's like the bottom couple teams don't play it. But, like, yeah. I mean, like, there's nothing gained from, like, the Pepperdine Pacific games for Gonzaga. Like, it's, again, it's a bye game in the middle of the season, right? Again, and again, it's tough. I mean, it is surprising it doesn't hurt them in recruiting.
Absolutely. Right? I mean,
like,
selling pros is, like, the most effective sell, you know?
Right. I mean, selling pros helps. Obviously, I think the other thing is, like, Spokane, like, like I just don't quite understand how are you recruiting elite players when you're selling Spokane, which is like a not great town. It's not exactly easily accessible either. The weather's not great. You're playing, you know, half your games against, you know, terrible teams in like not great atmospheres, you know.
Right. Like I get why Mark Few might not care. And I guess he's the end all be all, right? But like you figure that they'd have more fun in the Big East. I mean, they would. There's no way that they would recruit worse in the Big East. They'd play better games. You know, I don't buy into the whole they're not prepared enough to play in the NCAA tournament or whatever. But it feels like
no. I mean, it's preposterous. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like that they just want to fast forward their season to get to the NCAA tournament.
Right, that's the take. Right, it's dumb to say, oh, you know, they don't deserve, you know, they're not ready to play in the NCAA tournament because they've been more successful in the NCAA tournament, with the exception of winning the championship. Like their consistency of not losing early, with going deep, going to national championship game, going to the Final Four, is unmatched in the last like 5 years. So it's not like that's not like a compelling argument. You know, the idea that they're not like battle, the reason they're good in March is they're more battle, they're not as battle tested, like they're not as worn down. I also don't find that compelling, because it's not like they've played like I don't ever recall Gonzaga like winning upsets in March, right? Like when was the last time Gonzaga won a game in March where you're like, man, like I'm very surprised they won that game?
When they beat Seton Hall with Isaiah Whitehead and Angel Delgado as an 11 seed with Kyle Wilcher.
Right, and that team was criminally underseeded.
Right, that was one with that the was, whole Ken Palm that peak, stuff. Now they would
yeah peak RPI garbage. Yeah, that and like Wichita State getting like number ten every year in the metrics and not being like a 10 seed. Yeah. See, like it's not like Gonzaga. I would be more compelled by that argument if Gonzaga was playing like, you know, if Gonzaga was a 4 seed and they kept beating number one seeds because, you know, number one seeds are like kind of worn down. Like that doesn't make any sense to me.
Like they're playing the same guys every game. You know, it's not like they're sitting Chet and Timmy for the Pepperdine game or anything. You know.
Right. Yeah. Anyway, what else do we need to mention that we haven't yet mentioned? I think we've covered a lot of ground. I mean, Baylor. I guess we didn't mention them a lot. I think Jeremy Sohan's really good. Like really, really good. Like I think top 10 pick.
Yeah, I saw. I think Jeremy Woo. Put Jeremy Sohan is, one spot ahead of Kendall Brown.
Jeremy is adores Jeremy Sohan. He did before, and now he was in Waco for the Kansas game, and he's in Austin as we speak for the Texas game, and he is quite adoring of Mr. Sohan.
Good thing in the preseason we constantly mentioned how everybody likes Sohan.
Yeah, a good international recruit. Really intriguing. Couldn't tell you.
I liked
else.
Him better with intriguing the blue hair.
I love the blue gray. The blue gray was a good look. This looks like he drew a highlighter in his head.
Yeah, with Cryer. Doesn't seem like he's going to be back anytime soon.
Yeah, they have to be slow with him. They basically have six guys. I mean, they have six and then Dale Bonner, who's just out there not to do anything stupid.
So that's going to be tough. But...
No, I don't buy them like necessarily winning a championship, but they're really good. Absolutely. I thought they played a good game against Kansas. They did a nice job adjusting. And I thought, you know, again, just, you don't watch Kansas ever and, like, come away overwhelmed.
Did you watch Ohio State and was it Maryland yesterday?
I did not.
I didn't either, but at all.
Weird that Ohio State seems to be in, like, kind of free fall with these sort of randomly winning in Champaign.
Well, they're not that talented. They have one excellent player in Liddell. Branham is approaching excellent, I think. I mean,
Branham's really, really good. Yeah,
he's come on strong, but they don't have a ton of size, right? Young and Key are both kind of undersized. Suing and Towns have been hurt the whole year, so they're relying on a lot of kind of one dimensional guys. Their backcourt's not super strong with Wheeler and Johnson. That's not scaring anybody at the point. Russell's been up and down, and then Brown and Arns are nice role players, but they're not huge difference makers yet. So,
no, that's true.
The lack of size and the lack of point guard play is kind of hampering them.
I think it's kind of just obvious to me, at least, that like, you know, they go with Liddell. And if you go through the last few games, he's been quieter, you know? Right? Like, Liddell has been a National Player of the Year level guy for much of the season. But if you look through, he had 11 points against Maryland on 3-for-10 shooting. He had 15 points on 6-for-13 shooting against Iowa in the game they lost. The overtime game against Indiana, he had 16 points on 6-for-15 shooting. You know, these are good performances, but they're not, you know, overwhelmingly good. You know, they're not quite impressive. And you know, when you look back at, you know, all the 20-point games he had and the 35 against Northwestern, like, he has been really, really good. I just, you know, I think lately he's been a little bit quieter, and they don't have the – they can't afford that with how they're constructed.
Let's see. What else was there? Oh, Indiana almost blew an enormous lead. I watched that comeback.
They're a play-in. That Rutgers game on Wednesday is a play-in game.
Yeah, I think between Michigan, Indiana, and Rutgers, I think two of those are probably getting in.
Michigan's just got to win two of their next four games.
Right, they have a lot of losses, but as we went over last time, they have a much stronger strength of schedule than I realized, which is going to help them.
Yes. That'll be interesting. Got the mid-majors to watch. Kind of went over the bid stealers. Is there any other bid stealers that we missed? I don't think so. I think Virginia is a sneaky one. Like, if you were mapping out a power conference one, I think it'd be Virginia. No.
Wait, say that again?
If you're looking for a power conference bid thief, Virginia would be your bid thief, correct?
I didn't watch the Florida State game, but that was kind of concerning. You figured that they turned the corner and that they would kind of handle the hampered Seminoles, but
they blew like a 10-point lead.
I think power conference bid thief.
I think Oregon's the one that a lot of people are talking about.
Yeah, Oregon has the talent.
But they also could just get in on their own accord. They're right there.
I mean, they have at Washington State, which is the cheap quadra cheap one. Q1. They have Washington.
And they already have three Q1s.
They have to go 2-0 this week.
Yes. And they probably have to get to the Pac-12 championship game.
Yeah, I agree. Because as the four seed, right, they have Arizona in the semis, which is
right.
A great opportunity.
Blessing and a curse. Blessing and a curse.
I think more of a blessing, because if you know, you may have to beat Arizona anyway, whether it be in the finals or in the semifinals, so might as well get them earlier.
Right. Kind of like what Loyola Chicago, like, is it a blessing or a curse that they're playing, you know, they're the four seed and they're playing like a real team in the first round? Blessing, Q2 opportunity, curse, you might lose the game.
Right.
But let's actually wrap the show with that, Brad. Let's hit. I'll let you give your bid seal, and then we'll hit quickly some of these conference tournaments that are for the first week.
Yeah, I'm not feeling St. John's anymore after the
DePaul
loss. They have a legit amount of talent. They have guys who played better than expected, and they still can't figure it out. Aaron Wheeler being the one guy that was like, pretty awesome this year. Yes, Syracuse Edwards is not happening.
No.
And they blew that North Carolina game today. They were up one with 15 seconds, four on the shot clock, fumble it out of bounds. Caleb Love comes down, hits a three-pointer. They send it overtime, but then melted. There's not a real great – oh, how about
– The problem is, like, the SEC has too many good teams. You can't pick a bit stealer there. The Pac-12 has Arizona.
What about Kansas State?
Kansas State's going to win 3 in 3 days, 4 in 4 days if they're the bottom four, which I think they
are. I don't know.
I think they're feisty, but like, I think the league is too good.
I think that they can come in fifth. I haven't done a simulated end of the season since last week's games, but I think that they can come in fifth and play Texas in the first round.
And then beat Kansas and then beat Baylor. I mean, that's.
Well, I mean, the alternative is, I mean, Oregon has to beat Arizona and either UCLA or USC.
Which is why, like, Virginia. It's like it's really only one team that scares you, and it's Duke, who they've already beaten and then played really close the second time.
Okay. I can see that.
Anyway, let's hit these conference tournaments real quick and get out of here. Missouri Valley should be exciting. I've said this for a while. The Valley is like low-key underrated this year. There's five top 100 teams out of six who's 120. So that's, you know, this is not a bad league. Bradley's been tough. Northern Iowa's got it going with Carter and AJ Green. Drake is healthy finally again. And Tucker DeVries has been really good. And then Missouri State has Isaiah Mosley and Gage Prim. Like, this is really going to be a really fun tournament. I think I lean Loyola to win it. I do worry about how the games will be officiated. I mentioned that before, but
someone spent too much time with the Loyola staff or something.
No. I mean, look, when you play, when you're the one team leading the league, there have been tendencies in the past for the officiating not go your way. So
thoughts and prayers to UIC this weekend as well, then.
Well, I don't think they were winning the conference tournament even with the best officiating possible. But
I have no idea who's when teams are leaving or where is this BYU's last year in the WCC?
No, one more.
So there will be some overlap with Texas and Oklahoma with the new teams?
No. Yes, potentially. Depends. No one knows.
This has some like AAC vibes when they had Louisville and Rutgers.
Oh yeah. Any Missouri Valley thoughts, Brad?
No.
Got the Horizon League tournament. That'll be fun. Cleveland State. Dennis
Horizon Gates, League, 22 job. League games this year.
Crazy. Why would you do that?
Feels like we've... I mean, that was a bad precedent to be sent, I think.
Oh, yeah.
That, like, it was... Teams were playing 16, then 18, then a bunch of teams going to 20, and now we got somebody at 22.
Yeah.
Feels like we're approaching no more non-conference, which is very important. Non-conference is the only way to kind of anchor these conferences. But.
Yes. What else is there? Summit League tournament, South Dakota State and Oral Roberts, maybe round three. That'd be fun. Sunbelt is wide open.
I saw you had a Georgia State tweet.
Oh, and the Texas State fans got very mad because Texas State has won 10 in a row. I said that Georgia State's the hottest team in the league. But
Georgia State played a game against URI earlier this year when they were down like the whole team.
No, they were they had so many injuries early and now they're healthy and they feel they look really good. I talked to a coach in the league and they said that right now Georgia State kind of feels overwhelming, like just better than everyone else, and the league's been so balanced. But that, I mean, that's gonna be fun. Texas State has won 10 straight. South Alabama might be the most talented team in the league, although I'm hearing some injury news there that could harm them.
Is South Alabama really the most talented team in the league? If they're what, fifth place?
Well, their Ken Pom has the number one in the league.
Ooh, yeah. What a bunch of nerds with your
bunch of algorithms. Geeks. Make Wisconsin a one seed, Jeff Goodman. Yeah. Sorry, Jeff. Love you, man.
I mean, this Georgia State roster.
Very talented.
Nazemi was on Cincinnati.
Dosame.
Justin Roberts was on DePaul, right?
Oh, yeah. Legend. Dave Leto, legend.
Corey Allen, I think, was Detroit.
He's been around forever. Holy cow.
Nelson Phillips was a good recruit, I think.
Very good recruit.
All these guys, Jalen Thomas was as well.
Yeah, Jalen Thomas was going to go to UMass at one point.
I think Jordan Rawls has left, right? But
yeah, he's gone.
He is very good.
I think that was an addition by subtraction.
That was one where I was surprised he went lower. I thought he could go higher. You know,
everyone was hyping him. Yeah. But anyway, that tournament's gonna be a blast. Appalachian State is good. They won the league tournament last year. Arkansas State has two studs in Desi Sills and Norchad Omier. That'll be exciting. We have, and of course, I think Murray could get a push in the OVC tournament for Moorhead. I think they match up really well with Belmont, but Moorhead with Janai Broom. I mean, they won it last year. I always love when like the stars of March, like everyone was like, oh, Janai Broom, and then everyone just forgets about them. And then like it's March 1st, and you get all these tweets from like the big writers, like, oh yeah, everybody knows I've been the card carrying member of the Janai Broom fan club. It's like, okay, buddy.
No one has talked about Max Asemus in months.
Oh, Yeah, he's way off the radar.
I still can't believe he went back to Oral Roberts. That was insane.
What if he comes back another year? He's only a junior.
Go to somewhere exciting.
I mean, but right now he gets to fire the ball whenever he wants.
Go to Ohio State.
That's exciting. That would be full circle. How about that? I love that. All right, folks. I think that's a podcast. Enjoy your conference tournament action. There was conference tournament action today. Central Connecticut State and Fairleigh Dickinson.
Ooh.
Fairly sure Central Connecticut State won. That was the 8-9 game in the NEC. Hell of a ball game.
How about both of my alma maters are conference champions?
Maybe. Yes. Brad Cav is the lucky charm for college basketball right
now. Never been to a Bryant game in my life.
Shout out to the Stan Saints. Clinched top three in the league.
Which is important because they won't have to play Iona
until the championship game. And Monmouth's locked into the four. So Monmouth, who I think is the second most talented team in the league, now gets to play out in the semifinal. Could be very good. Watch out for the Saints, baby.
What happened to Fairfield?
They were never good.
I watched them light up the Friars opening night.
Fairfield was bad last year. Played three good games really in the conference tournament. Randomly go to the people randomly pick them like top four in the league. They hit like occasionally will hit like 13 threes and be good because James
Wojcik.
Jake Wojcik. Yeah, Jake Wojcik, not James Wojcik. He can really fire it, but they have no talent.
And like the first net ranking, they were like top 100.
I remember that. Siena swept the Stags per source.
Yeah, so Providence opened the last 2 years with Fairfield.
I remember that.
So the weird no fan COVID year, they won by 40, and their center Supreme Cook was like the worst player I've ever seen. That was his first career game.
Viral anyway.
Then this year, they actually played Providence pretty tight, and Cook was actually pretty good. Has he not maintained a high level of play? Is that
no? He's so, okay. They just like none of Supreme Cook is not like a difference maker in the MAC though. He's like a fine player. They don't have a single difference maker. Wojcik is the closest, and he's just a shooter. You need some dogs. You need a Colby Rogers, the Anthony Gaines, the Jackson Stormo. You know,
they hit that.
Jared Billups, JV McCollum. Saints are gonna be tough, but. All right, folks, that's a podcast. You guys don't need the Mac talk.